friends, good morning and welcome. You are listening to Frankly Speaking Radio. I am your host, Frank Whalen, and I'm thrilled that you're here this evening. We are getting a history lesson from our guest this evening, and we'll resume that here in just a second. But just for your records, it's Thursday, March 29th, 2007, about 1 a.m. here in the Central Time Zone. Welcome to all of you joining us on shortwave at frequency 3.215. Welcome to all of you listening online at the only officially sanctioned website for the network. That would be republicbroadcasting.org. Maybe you're listening at our website, franklyspeakingradio.com. If you go there, you'll see a link to our guest's website, CS2. We've talked about the first one many times. In fact, it's www.ralph-epperson.com, Epperson with two Ps. And if you prefer, you can go to the one specific to the book we're discussing here this evening, and that is www.senatorjessejames.com. The book is entitled Jesse James, United States Senator, and here to explain it all to us, again, Ralph Epperson. Thank you again so much for your time, sir.
You're very kind. Well, I never thought about what the nice gold circle name represents, but my first gut feeling is it represents the golden circle, which is the sun.
Mm.
The Knights of the Sun.
That's interesting.
And I think, and of course, the Masons are sun worshippers, and so there might be a connection there. The Knights of the Golden Circle might have been the Knights of the Golden Sun, the Knights of the Circular Sun, the Gold Sun, whatever. I think that's what it was.
That makes a lot of sense, especially given the information you told us about, you know, the naming of the country and whatnot.
Yes.
Wow.
So anyway, now we've got John Wilkes Booth deciding to escape after shooting Lincoln. So he runs out to Ford Theater and gets on a horse and rides down. Stanton, of course, hears about the assassination and runs over and issues orders. He's the Secretary of War. Even though the war is over, he issues orders to blockade the ways out. There's eight of them. The ways out of Washington, D.C., and says, well, if I can keep the criminal, the murderer, assassin, inside the city, I've got a chance to catch him. But for some reason, I don't know why, he decides to miss one of the eight escape routes.
Mm-hmm.
That just happens to send troops to seven and says, don't let anybody out of the city, tighten it up. And he misses one, and that just so happened to be the one John Wilkes Booth took to get out of Washington, D.C.
All these coincidences.
Yeah, another coincidence, yes. And that it just so happened that if once you got off the bridge, it was called the Navy Yard Bridge. Once you got off the bridge and went a few miles, you're in the state of Maryland, which I believe was the southern state, so you're in the south and not in the north anymore. And it just so happens that's where Booth goes. So, and by the way, Stanton never got charged with dereliction of duty, never had to explain that. There was no investigation. Stanton got out of it okay. Isn't that interesting?
It is.
Stanton was a member of the Knights Golden Circle as well.
Ah.
And I believe also a Mason. He was reported to be a Mason by someone who wrote a book way back back around 1900 or something. So I presume, I'm guessing, I don't know. Anyway, he was, Booth escapes and ends up in a barn with another fellow. And Northern troops under the command of, the overall command of Stanton, determine he's inside the barn, and they surround the barn and shout out to Booth, come on out with your hands up, we know you're surrounded, come on out. And so, they're ordered to catch him and do not kill him.
Mm-hmm.
They want him alive, of course, to talk about the assassination. So a sergeant by the name of Boston Corbett decides, I'm going to disobey the order, and shoots John Wilkes Booth. So they drag the body out, and he's dead, and the other guy claims that he was just a friend, and he was helping. He didn't know that he was Booth or whatever it was, and he got away, I think, without any imprisonment or anything else.
Well, that's a relief, and we'll talk about why exactly, or perhaps not. Stay with us, folks. We have to pause here for another commercial break, but we'll be right back with more from our guest, Ralph Epperson. And sometime here this hour as well, we'll be giving out his contact info so you can purchase the book if you don't have internet access. So stay with us.
Imagine a firefly, simple and innocent, the ability to light the night sky. The ozone layer, unseen by the naked eye, life-sustaining. Our ocean, primordial soup, breathes life. Bring the wonders of nature home.
Soleil salt lamps, handcrafted from million-year-old crystal salt, will gently ionize and purify your indoor air, helping you breathe easier. Nourish your mind and body with soothing colors for deep relaxation and neutralize EMF radiation, protecting your family's health.
Visit SOLAYWellness.com for powerful, simple, life-sustaining Solay wellness products created from nature in harmony with nature.
Hi, I'm Isabella, founder of Solay Wellness. Visit us or call 866-497-0274. 866-497-0274.
Since 1988, Herbal Healer Academy has been the global supplier of the finest natural medicines. We specialize in keeping you alive and healthy. We provide outstanding products like ECX, colloidal silver, olive leaf extract, oregano oil, and hundreds of herbals, oils, books, and educational materials. We have homeopathic detox solutions for chemtrails, radiation, MSG, and aspartame poisoning. We also train naturopathic healers via correspondence education. Why wait any longer? Go ahead and do it today. Sign up on the web and receive our new 120-page catalog and a current Herbal Healer newsletter free. Simply log on to herbalhealer.com and check out the online member testimonials and our hundreds of exceptional products. That's herbalhealer.com, your website for safe, effective, natural alternatives and education. That's herbalhealer.com.
In the United States, it is now estimated that over 90% of family income is now being used to pay back consumer debt. Because of financial problems, mostly from credit card debt, approximately 1 in 4 families struggle to pay bills on even basic necessities such as mortgage, food, and utilities. And with millions of people desperately searching for a fresh start, North American Educational Services is here to help you regain your financial independence. We are very proud that the Debt Relief Educational Services Program has helped over 8,100 families nationwide since 1998, eliminating over $215 million of credit card debt, and still counting, and enabled clients to stop monthly payments immediately. The NAES program is unique, designed to help you, the consumer, not your creditors. To take back your financial freedom, call 1-888-245-7097. That's 1-888-245-7097. Or visit www.integritydebtoptions.com.
Good morning and welcome back, my friends. You are listening to Frankly Speaking Radio. I am your host, Frank Whalen. Glad you're here. Our special guest this evening, great friend, great, brilliant author, researcher, historian, Ralph Epperson. Welcome back, sir.
You're very kind, Frank. I don't know why you come up with those statements. They're making those claims. But I don't either.
No, they're all well-deserved, my friend.
Well, I want to make sure that you make sure that you tell your listeners that I did not bribe you or pay you to say those things. Is that true? Frank, help me here, Frank.
What?
Huh?
I plead the fifth. No. Of course not. No,
of course
absolutely not.
Right. Yes, okay. Anyway, let's go on here. Now, we got a dead man down to 20 or 30 miles into Maryland, and it's a claim that was John Wilkes Booth. Mm-hmm. So Stanton goes down there and says he's not a doctor and can't do an autopsy, but he'll certify that the body, since it's dead, that then they wanted him alive. They'll certify that that's really the dead John Wilkes Booth. So John Wilkes Booth is officially cited by Stanton to be dead, and that was it. Now, the man, the shot in the barn was not Booth. It was the captain by the name of James William Boyd, who had the same initials. And by the way, I've got a picture of him in a book, and he looked amazingly like John Wilkes Booth. Mm. So I don't know how Booth got, not Booth, but Stanton got him, but he found him and thought he'd be a perfect double, and he'd be able to certify that he was the real Booth, and then Booth could live forever, you know, for a long time anyway. Mm. So anyway, now, there were four differences between Booth and Boyd. Booth had dark black hair, and Boyd had kind of reddish brown hair. Booth was like 23 or 26 years old, and Boyd was in his 40s. No one knows for sure how old he was, but he was at least in his 40s. He was a captain in the Southern Army. Boyd was, let's see, Boyd had, they both had mustaches, but Booth had shaved his off when he got to Samuel Mudd's house to treat, Dr. Mudd's house, to treat his broken left ankle. So, and Booth, Boyd, rather, had injured his right leg, I guess walked with a limp, with some sort of war injury. Maybe he was shot. And then the last thing was that the, let's see, oh boy, well, there's another thing that was different, and I can't remember what it is right now. It'll occur to me in a minute. Maybe. it's, but anyway, I'll try and remember what it is. There's, well, there's four things, and but Booth... Stanton said, no, it's him, so that, that ended the problem. So now, then they took the body of, quote, Booth, unquote, and buried it in an Army fort so no one could dig it up to prove that it was really James William Boyd. So anyway, that was the end of the John Wilkes Booth story. No, it wasn't. John Wilkes Booth lived until being 65 years old and died in 1903. Now, I've been to Granbury, Texas, where later on Dalton, James Dalton, the man who I believe is the real Jesse, is buried. And as I was doing some sightseeing and doing a little research trying to find out more about Dalton, I stumbled onto the story that Granbury, Texas, believes that John Wilkes Booth was a bartender in that town, and they built little stories about it. In fact, you can go to the bar where they believe he served around 1880 or 1890, something like that, and he died allegedly in 1903. So, officially, the story has it that, that Booth was dead, but he wasn't dead. He died in 1903. But the interesting thing about the story is that since he was a member of the Knights of the Golden Circle, he had taken a vow to obey every order by his superiors.
Right.
Now, Jesse James was had become the treasurer of the Knights of the Golden Circle after the Civil War. And the Knights of the Golden Circle had buried over $7 billion in gold to start a second Civil War. And, of course, they didn't have a second Civil War, so we'll cover that next. Okay. Let's go back now to the Booth thing. Jesse James claimed that he had been funding Booth for $300 a month to keep his silence, but to allow him to keep a reasonable, you know, I guess $300 probably was a lot of money in those days.
Sure.
And he could live, you know, reasonably well, and he surely could do whatever he wanted to do. Apparently became a bartender. But he had I guess, had a real conscience because it was bothering him. He became an alcoholic. And Jesse James heard that, that Booth was drinking too much and reporting that he was the real John Wilkes Booth, and they didn't want that story out. So Jesse James found out he was living in Enid, Oklahoma, and he went there and found him living in a boarding house. And according to the story, he was drunk. Booth was drunk. And Jesse kind of woke him up. With a, Jesse was with one other man, apparently also in the Knights of the Golden Circle. And the two of them woke up Booth and got him to drink two glasses of lemonade full of arsenic. And when they made sure that Booth was dead, they just walked away. They left him. He was in a boarding house in a room that he had rented himself. So they could leave him and no one would, you know, they, a couple of visitors came to see him and they left. So the people that ran the boarding house didn't know who they were. So a day or two or 3 days, 4 days later, whatever it was, the rooming house owner, manager, whoever it was, noticed that Booth hadn't been seen for a while. So he went up the door and banged on the door, and there was no answer. So he opened the door and walked in, and there's Booth laid out dead in his bed. But the arsenic had actually embalmed his body, and there was no decay, or very little decay.
Wow.
So the word went out that John Wilkes Booth had died in Enid, Oklahoma, and several people who knew Booth showed up, including his brother and his nephew. So they showed up and certified that the body laying in the bed was John Wilkes Booth. Oh, no, that's impossible. Of course, Stanton knew better than his own brother and his nephew. So Booth did die in 1903. Now, because his body had been embalmed by the arsenic, there was no reason to embalm him normally, and so the man was, the body was relatively intact, and someone who knew the story, I guess paid him or paid up the rent or I don't know what he did, but he took the body and put it on the circus sideshow things. Come and see the body of John Wilkes Booth and pay a quarter. And in 1938, Life magazine discovered the mummy. We'll call it a mummy, and did a story on it. There's pictures of the mummy laying on the floor. And according to Life magazine, doctors examined the mummy and found out that it had a badly set left ankle, broken left ankle, and that he had lost part of his left, I think his left thumb, it could have been the right one, but one of his thumbs was damaged, and that was noted as well. And John Wilkes Booth, it was known, had lost part of his thumb in an accident on stage someplace. Something fell on it or cut it off or something, wherever it was.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was evidence, plus the testimony that 1903 that this man was Booth, led the world to believe that he was dead and that the mummy was his, and then it's disappeared. Now, a friend of mine believes he knows where it is, even today in 2007.
Wow.
So we might very well have some fun with that, maybe DNA with that body, to find out if it was really John Wilkes Booth.
It's amazing. I want to interject something here, Ralph, if you don't mind.
Oh.
Your book, Jesse James, United States Senator, is filled with wonderful photographs, including one taken from Life magazine in 1930, and it is a photograph of the mummy of John Wilkes Booth.
Yes.
It's a fantastic photo. It's creepy.
Yes, it is. He's laying. His eyes are open. I guess they put glass eyes in there, and they his eyes are open. He's laying there, and it's impossible to tell. And because the skin is all tied up. And in fact, the reports were that it was kept moist with Vaseline. So I don't know what that did, but it shrunk it. But anyway, the doctors at the time felt it could have been. There's no way to know. They didn't have DNA then. And even if they did, they'd need some relative someplace along the line to confirm it was John mm-hmm. Wilkes Booth. But I believe it was him, because I believe that he did survive. He did his job for the Knights School and Circle, and he was a Mason, and they protect themselves. So he
makes
was protected.
Sense. It makes sense.
So now, that takes care of Booth. Booth is gone. So now, Jesse James, and let's go, we're going to move backwards now, back to 1867.
Okay.
There was a plan to create a second Civil War. The Knights of the Golden Circle had buried money, had raised money, primarily in gold, to fund a second Civil War. But they needed agitation. So the Knights of the Golden Circle created a group called the Ku Klux Klan in 1867. The major officer, the major founder, was a general in the South called Nathan Bedford Forrest. And in the Masonic literature, Nathan Bedford Forrest was a Mason. And Jesse James helped arrange the founding of the Knights of the Ku Klux Klan. But there's even one more interesting connection. The letter K is the 11th letter of the alphabet. And if you have three K's in a KKK, I'm going to test your mathematics, Frank. Let's see how good you are.
Uh-oh.
How much is 3 times 11?
33.
Hey, you got it right on the
yes.
first time. So isn't that an interesting coincidence?
It is.
KKK times 3 is 33. Interesting, the Masons.
Again, a coincidence.
Yeah, another coincidence, right. Mm-hmm. They could have picked the letter Z or M or whatever, mm-hmm. or KLM or whatever they wanted, but they didn't. So I believe that's why it was called the Ku Klux Klan.
Mm-hmm.
KKK, 11th letter times 3 is 33. So show the Masons' involvement in the forming. Okay, now, that Civil War never came off, and I don't know why. Apparently, they couldn't get the American people angry enough to fight a second Civil War, but they didn't get the bank that they wanted in the Civil War.
Mm-hmm.
So now the strategy was to change the strategy. Now let's take the next step of learning about banking.
Okay.
If everybody who has cash deposited in a savings account, okay.
Yes, up to another break. I apologize.
That's okay.
Folks, very, very, very fascinating element of history that you may or may not know much about, and if you do know something, you certainly don't know all of it. Jesse James, an integral component exemplifying the conspiracy, all summed up in one man, and we're hearing the story from our guest, Ralph Epperson. Stay with us. Back in 3 minutes.
In Matthew 24, the disciples asked Jesus, "What shall be the signs of thy coming and the end of the world?" Jesus answered them,
You shall hear of wars and rumors of wars. For nation shall rise against nation, and kingdom against kingdom, and there shall be famines, diseases, earthquakes in many places. Fellow Americans, we are living in this time of Earth's history. People everywhere are trying to understand these climatic world events in light of human wisdom, but without the wisdom of God, this is impossible. Our ministry would like to offer information on the Mark of the Beast and the Unholy Alliance. It includes four books and several DVDs for your information. It discusses America in prophecy, the Antichrist, tyrants and wars, secret societies, the New World Order, and much more. So to be prepared for what is coming on the world as an overwhelming surprise, call for your free materials, Packet F. 888-211-1715. Again, 888-211-1715.
Wow, that coffee smells really good.
Hey, it's terrific, and it's healthy.
Healthy coffee. How does it taste?
Well, since healthy coffee blends are pre-brewed from organic Arabica beans, they're delicious.
Gosh, I had no idea coffee could be healthy.
Yeah, this coffee boosts your immunity, has 165 antioxidants for all kinds of health benefits. Plus, it gives you energy without a lot of caffeine. And since you're a big coffee drinker, I thought, well, maybe you'd want to know about it.
It sounds great, but how much does it cost?
Well, not much at all, really. A whole lot less than we've been paying for ordinary coffee at the coffee shop.
Wow. I'd love to try it, and I bet everyone at the office would, too. Where do I get some?
Just call toll-free, 866-222-3017. Or you can go to coffeeking.biz. Ask for a sample when you're there, or get set up as a preferred customer with a 25% discount. I did.
Okay, that's toll-free, 866-222-3017, or coffeeking.biz. I'll do it now. Thanks.
Imagine a firefly, simple and innocent, the ability to light the night sky. The ozone layer, unseen by the naked eye, life-sustaining. Our ocean, primordial soup, breathes life. Bring the wonders of nature home.
Sole Salt Lamps, handcrafted from million-year-old crystal salt, will gently ionize and purify your indoor air, helping you breathe easier. Nourish your mind and body with soothing colors for deep relaxation, and neutralize EMF radiation, protecting your family's health.
Visit SOLAYWellness.com for powerful, simple, life-sustaining Sole Wellness products, created from nature in harmony with nature.
Hi, I'm Isabella, founder of Sole Wellness. Visit us or call 866-497-0274. 866-497-0274.
Good morning and welcome back, folks. Glad you're here. You are listening to Frankly Speaking Radio. Very special guest this evening, author, historian Ralph Epperson, joining us, talking about his book, Jesse James, United States Senator. Ralph, welcome back.
Thank you very much, Frank. I'm here.
Amazing stuff.
You know, we were talking about a bank run. Let's talk about a bank run. And I don't mean to startle you, Frank, but the bank doesn't have your money.
Oh, well, that's true because I don't give them my money.
Oh, you don't give them your money.
Yeah, I'm not startled at all by that.
Okay.
In fact, that's a relief to know that the bank didn't steal my money. Okay. But please continue.
You must have it in, what, a tin can in your backyard? What do you do with it?
I keep it all stashed here at work.
And at work. That's good.
In my boss's office.
Your boss's office is safe. Okay.
That's right.
Well, let's talk about this. A bank run is started when everybody goes at the same time to get their money out. And there's no bank in this country that can fund that. In other words, why? Because let's just make it simple. Let's say that they take in $1 million worth of cash. What do they do with that money? They don't just hoard it in the safe downstairs.
Right.
They loan the money out. And if they loan the money out, they don't have it. So if everybody in the town goes for their $1 million on the same day, the bank says, I'm sorry, we don't have it. What do you mean you don't have it? I've got a piece of paper here, a little record that shows you I got a, say, $10,000 in the bank, and where is it? Well, we loaned it out. Well, get it back. Well, because they loaned the money to the contractor. He's building a house. Well, he He says, I don't have the money either. What do you mean you don't have it? We gave you $10,000. Well, I paid the contract, you know, the carpenters, and I bought the plumbing, and I bought whatever else. Well, I'll get it back from him. So you go to the plumber. He doesn't have the money. He's paid salaries and everything. So in other words, the money's circulated. There's no money. Oh, no, wait a minute, Ralph. Yeah, they've solved that problem with the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation. You've heard about that. FDIC insured. Everybody's been protected up to $100,000, I think it is. All your savings. That's wonderful news, except they don't have the money either. The last figure I had was something like they have 2% of the total assets of the bank in cash in their FDIC.
Wow.
So, in other words, if everybody nationwide goes for their money, they don't. Even the FDIC doesn't have the money. So now, in 1907, well, let's do it this way. If you then announce that a particular bank is insolvent, it's very simple to go and get the people say, well, gee, the banker says my bank's insolvent. They all go down there. I got to get my money out.
Mm-hmm.
You don't understand that they've only got a percentage of it. So they go down and start getting with their money, and it's called a bank run. And then the people in Topeka say, gee, if the bank in New York City's insolvent, maybe my bank is insolvent. So they go down to their bank, and the same thing happens.
Mm-hmm.
So it's called a nationwide bank run. Well, in 1907, J.P. Morgan goes to Paris and London to meet, I believe, with the Rothschilds. There's two banks, the major banks of the Rothschilds are in New York City, in Paris and in London. So they went there, and I believe they discussed how they're going to cause a panic in 1907. And the thing was, well, that's what we'll do. Let's come back, and when Morgan gets back on shore in America, first thing he says is, my evidence is that a certain bank, I think it was called the Knickerbocker Bank, is insolvent. So the people said, gee, I wonder if that's true. J.P. Morgan should know he's the nation's best banker. So I'm going to go to my bank and get my money out. And they go, and I've got pictures of people standing here, you know, blocks away trying to get their money. They don't have it. Well, so by gosh, J.P. Morgan was right. Well, if they're bankrupt in New York City, then maybe they're bankrupt in Topeka. So you got a bank run. And after the bank run, J.P. Morgan says, I know what we need, these unscrupulous bankers. We need a central bank called the Federal Reserve. And so we got it in 1913.
Wow.
America got the bankers, the European and American bankers, got what they wanted over 140 years, wherever it is, from 1776 to 1913. They finally got what they wanted. The central bank has the power to create paper money out of nothing and to loan it to the government at interest, and then they can sit back and count the money and sit. You know, money. One thing nice about money, if it works for you instead of people, is that money doesn't take vacations. It doesn't have sick leave, doesn't get pregnant, doesn't catch the cold. It's not late on Thursday morning when it misses the bus. Doesn't want time out to go take care of a sick child.
It's true.
It works 24/7, 365. So that's the best way to do it.
Mm.
So you want to get money. So that's what they did. The bankers now got the money. Now, let me tell you this, Frank. The money that we carry, the Federal Reserve notes we carry, has been printed by the Federal Reserve. Printed by the Treasury Department.
Mm-hmm.
And so the Federal Reserve has to pay the bankers, the Treasury Department, for printing the money. Well, how much would you pay for a $100 bill? It's 4 cents.
Wow.
In other words, it costs you 4 cents. You pay the Department of Treasury to print the $100 bill. It's 4 cents, and then you loan it as $100 back to the federal government. What kind of profit is that, Frank? Do what you say. Is that called a normal business profit? Or not?
Well, I'm a simple man, Ralph. In my terminology, I'd call that a lot.
A lot. Okay. That's one heap big profit.
Yes.
If you can spend 4 cents and make $100, that's not too shabby.
Not bad at all. It's quite a scam.
Yes.
You know, the other thing, too, and you talk about, you know, how far back this thing dates and how long it took them to pull it off. You know, these are people who are all of different generations, different eras, all working toward the same goal. If that isn't indicative of how this conspiracy works, how it moves forward, it's always moving forward. It's glacial. It transcends many, many lifetimes of people working towards something that they may or may not ever achieve in their lifetime. But they're always, always, always new recruits pushing forward on these things. Stay with us, folks. We're back in three with more from our guest, Ralph Epperson.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.
Sit back, relax, and enjoy a vacation to the beautiful Ozark Mountains. Howard Creek Resort is nestled conveniently between the cities of Bull Shoals and Mountain Home on Bull Shoals Lake in the natural state of Arkansas. Howard Creek Resort offers easy access to excellent fishing and water recreation of all types. The excitement of nearby Branson music shows and Silver Dollar City is accented perfectly by the many attractions located here in the heart of the Ozarks. Horseback riding, water skiing, scuba diving, hiking, caves, and rock climbing are just a few of the many activities that are available to do in our area. Howard Creek Resorts offers it all. Whether you're staying for the weekend or for a month, Howard Creek Resorts is the place to be, an excellent place to stay, and a valued traditional family vacation resort. Visit our website at www.howardcreek.com or call 1-877-253-7690. Come visit us for a lifetime of memories.
Are you paying exorbitant amounts of interest to your mortgage lender? We as Americans have been led down a path of paying excessive amounts of interest to the lending institutions. Stop paying tens of thousands of dollars in mortgage interest and start saving. Our financial experts have spent 2 years and about $2 million on a revolutionary interest reduction solution that will show you how to pay off 100% of your mortgage and other debt in as little as 8 to 11 years with no change to your current lifestyle or spending habits. No increase to your monthly mortgage payments, no refinancing, and no out-of-pocket expense. That's right. Take 19 to 22 years off your 30-year mortgage. This is not a bi-weekly payment program or a debt roll-down program. It's much more. Sound too good to be true? Find out just how good. Visit interestreductionsolutions.com or call 1-800-281-5094. That's 1-800-281-5094. Ask about our free DVD and financial analysis report.
Hi, Michelle. I haven't seen you on the bus for a while. Did they change your shift?
No, Lori. I finally quit my job. I'm working at home now, and I love it. No more commuting. And I'm home when the kids get out of school.
Working at home? Doing what?
It's a long story. It all started when I discovered the website earnmoneyathome123.com.
Oh, Michelle, you didn't fall for one of those internet deals, did you?
Well, I looked into several, and this one is for real.
Are you sure?
I didn't quit my job until I was sure, and now I'm making way more money working at home.
Really?
I've joined the success team in their major advertising co-op. Our business is fully automated, which gives me more money and the time to enjoy it. I'll be earning money while we're skiing this winter.
What was that website again?
EarnMoneyAtHome123.com. Here, write it down.
Good idea. EarnMoneyAtHome123.com. Maybe we can go skiing this winter, too.
EarnMoneyAtHome123.com is a global opportunity.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Glad you're here. You're listening to Frankly Speaking Radio, and of course, our special guest this evening, Ralph Epperson. Two websites you can go to, ralpheperson.com with a dash between the two words, of course, linked up on our website as always. And then the website specific to this book, SenatorJesseJames.com. Ralph, welcome back.
Thank you very much, Frank.
Thank you.
Okay, we're right in the middle of talking about Jesse James and Quay Manders Clark and John Wilkes Booth. And
the banks and all that jazz, yeah.
Okay, let's take the next step. In 1948, a man by the name of J. Frank Dalton walks into the lot in Oklahoma newspaper and claims to be Jesse James, the famous outlaw. And the world, they say, well, that's impossible. Jesse died in 1882, Everybody knows that. We got the official pictures and his wife and everybody else. He said, "Nope, I shot another man and then had that the wife. I paid her $15,000 to tell the sheriff that the man on the table on the floor was Jesse James." Well, and he said that's not possible. So the two reporters assigned to the story checked it out the best they could, and they were convinced that he was legitimate. He was the real Jesse James. So now, then, as soon as that story went out, they published a newspaper. I got a copy of it. The headline reads, "Jesse James Alive in Lawton," something like that. And so the world who knew Jesse James, many people are still living, or at least they were young when they knew Jesse, and they showed up, people that were 80, 90, 100 years old. Dalton was at that time claimed to be 101, which would have been right because Jesse was born in 1847. This was 1981.
Mm-hmm.
So people showed up and said, "Yeah, you can't be Jesse." And he said, "Well, okay, ask me some question." So they say, "Well, Jesse, do you remember when we lived in Kearney, Missouri, you and I went swimming and something happened?" And Jesse said, "Oh, yes, I remember you now. Your name was, let's just make it up, Frank Whalen, and you were swimming, and you and I were swimming, and you started to drown, and I saved you."
Mm-hmm.
Now, the only way that whoever this man was would know that is if he was the real Jesse James and remembered the story about Frank Whalen nearly drowning. So, sure enough, people signed affidavits claiming that they knew Jesse and that this man, sworn affidavits, that this man was indeed the real Jesse James. So, boy, that opened up a Pandora's box because everybody said Jesse's dead. Now, so Dalton started telling the story. I remember I talked about the two Bigelows who were shot dead buried in Missouri someplace. I think it was in 1864 or something like that. So they were buried, shot during the Civil War, and there's no evidence as to why they were shot. Just the tombstone says they were both dead on the same day. So let's go back to the north, looking for Frank James and on Jesse's farm, and I believe that two of those men were Bigelows, and that they were hunted down by Jesse and killed for what they did to his father and his stepfather and to him as well, and they were both buried. Now, these men were in their, as I remember, late 40s, and so they could have had a young son. And I believe Charlie Bigelow was the son of one of these two men, or at least a cousin or somebody related, and he sought to avenge the murder of his two family members.
Mm-hmm.
So Charlie Bigelow, that no one knows anything about, all the people that I read said there was no gang member named Charlie Bigelow, and I believe that's quite likely that he was not, his name, he was either living under an alias, or can't find Charlie Bigelow under the alias, or he really lived under Jesse James and only was involved with one fight, and I think that's what happened.
Hmm.
You might remember they've made movies about this. There was, in fact, there was just a documentary on it just a little while ago about the battle in, what's the name of the town? Someplace in Minnesota.
Hmm.
Jesse James and his gang, the younger gang, went to Minnesota to rob a bank, Northfield, Minnesota. Mm-hmm. Is that right, Northfield, Minnesota? Okay, it'll come to me in a minute, I think. But so far, I believe that's it.
Okay.
So they went up there, eight men went up there, but various writers that I read said there were not eight men, there were nine, but they don't know who the ninth man was. And if he went up there, since we know what happened to the eight men, and we know who they are by name, this ninth man, I believe, was Charlie Bigelow, who couldn't shoot Jesse himself, but notified the people in Northfield or even the Pinkerton Detective Agency about, who were looking for Jesse and Frank, and probably the Youngers as well. And so they notified the city, and so Jesse rode in there without knowing that with his gang, eight men, and two of them were shot at the scene. They were shot dead by the town, which responded very quickly to the bank robbers, started firing back, and they killed two of them at the scene. One later on, that's three of the eight. The three younger brothers were captured. Some were injured, I think, later on. They all went to jail, as I remember. Maybe one of them even died, I don't remember now.
Mm-hmm.
And the two more, Jesse and Frank, by strange coincidences, were never shot or harmed during the Northfield raid, but they fled and went back home to Missouri, and they got away with the murder. Now, if it was Charlie Bigelow that was the ninth man at the Northfield raid, I believe he was assigned a job like stay here at the bridge and guard it, make sure no sheriff comes across, or if they do, you let notify us, and we'll get out of here quicker, or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe that once he got there and they left him, he decided to flee. And because I believe that Jesse figured it out, that he must have notified the people in the city, because it was very rare for the city to respond by shooting the bank robbers. But that's what happened. So I believe that Jesse found out that this man, Charlie Bigelow, was responsible for at least three of his gang members being shot, and three of them, the youngers, all ended up in jail, and maybe one of them died. I've forgotten now. At least two went to jail, and one of them, I think, died. So as a result of the shootings at the bank robbery.
Mm-hmm.
So now Jesse decided to find Bigelow and to do him in as well. And I believe he killed his two uncles, or his, a father and an uncle. So it took him some time to find him, but he finally did living in St. Joseph, Missouri, under the name of Tom Howard, I think it was, under an alias. And Jesse found him, and one morning when Bigelow got up and walked into the barn, Jesse shot him in the head from the front, and he fell dead. And then he drugged the body into the house and caught, surprised Mrs. Bigelow and said, from now on, you're going to tell that this man on the floor was your husband, Jesse James. And the reason was because there was a $10,000 reward out for James, and so he bribed her with $15,000. And their two children suddenly became last name James. They were very young, like 4 and 8 or 4 and 6 or something, so they don't really know much about this time in their life. But I've got evidence from other writers that they both wondered how come their names got changed. And one of them, I think the older boy, said, I didn't even know what my first name was until it suddenly became Robert, I think it was. And that was the name that Jesse named it, the boy, because he wanted the world to believe it was Robert James, the son of Jesse. So now, Jesse now is free to live again. So he's now killed off Bigelow. He had to cover that story up. And according to Dalton, who I believe was the real Jesse, he went to his own funeral. They buried Bigelow under under a church ceremony, and they had a choir and six men carrying the coffins and everything else. And Jesse James went to his own funeral by having a piece of metal made to change his outlook, his facial appearance, and he sang in the choir and then carried the casket. And writers that I found said there were five men, all identified, who were going to carry the casket, but they needed a sixth. And suddenly a man shows up without name. They don't know, even all the writers I read couldn't find out who this man was, but whoever he was, he took over, he took charge, and carried the casket to wherever they were going to bury it or whatever they were going to do with it. And they don't know. And I think it was Jesse James himself under this with this thing in his mouth concealing his identity.
Hmm.
By the way, one more story. There were pictures taken of Bigelow laying on the table with the sheriff and I think the coroner or the undertaker and one other man. And everybody claims it's Jesse James. And I dare you to put that picture side by side with the real pictures of Jesse, and it's not the same man.
Now, is this the picture in the book?
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
That picture of the man laying on the floor on the table is not the picture of Jesse.
Now, no, everything looks different. I mean, the hairline looks different. The eyes look different. Obviously, the facial hair looks different, but that doesn't really mean anything. And, many things, actually.
Now, the man known as Jesse, the dead one, is wearing a full beard, a rather big, good-sized beard. The sheriff somehow notified Zerelda James, who lived about 30 miles away, I'm guessing, I don't know, in Kearney. This was in St. Joseph. And so she shows up and walks into the room with the dead Jesse and says, "That's not my son." Oh, no, wait a minute, Zerelda, you can't do that. So one of Jesse's friends was in the room and took her aside and said, listen, Cirilli, you got to say it's your son because your son is alive and he's around the town someplace, and he wants you to say it's him because he can now live without a reward over his head. So sure enough, Zarella said, oh, I understand. And she walked back in and said, I made a mistake. I'm sorry. The beard surprised me, and it really is my son. I haven't seen him for a couple of years, and that's not true because even the writers that I read said that just 2 weeks before, the real Jesse was visiting his mother in Kearney, Missouri. So see how it's amazing. You kept finding these little bizarre twists, and most of the writers that I read about Jesse James don't ask the question. Wait, how can that be?
They just gloss it over, sure, absolutely. Just
don't even question it. And they look at the picture and don't compare it to the real picture of Jesse and say, how can that be? There's no question that man on the table is not the real Jesse.
Well, go ahead.
In my book, I point out there's a bunch of problems. Like you said, hairline is different, the nose is different, the hair part is different. Plus, he was 5'11", and Jesse was only 5'8", maybe 5'7", at the most 5'9".
Wow.
There's 2 inches, so it just can't be.
Not even close.
No. So anyway, now, to make stories quicker, we're running out of time, let's quickly cover William Andrews Clark, because he became a major player in our past. That's the Jesse James connection.
Keep in mind, we do have an additional hour left in the program after, you know, so we have an hour and 15 minutes left. If we go over, that's okay with me.
Okay.
So if as long as you're okay, I'm okay with it.
Okay.
But,
if you want to do it, let's do it.
I mean,
keep talking, and we'll end up taking some calls, maybe.
All right. That sounds good. Now, let me ask you a little bit more about J. Frank Dalton. Now, he claimed to be Jesse, and obviously had the memories, you know, and all the recollections that only Jesse James would have.
Yes.
Now, what about the other things? You had mentioned that Jesse was tortured as a young man.
Yes, and Dalton exhibits, when he died, a sheriff and an undertaker looked at the body, and they recorded what they found. And Dalton had rope burns around his neck, scars, from being twisted and hung. His feet are black. In fact, in the picture of Dalton sitting, I've got like four pictures at his 101st, 102nd birthday. He's laying in bed. And for whatever reason, the sheet is pulled up over his 1 foot. And you can see in the arch, it's black. Now, I called a couple of doctors here in town. I said, why would, if a man's feet were badly burned, what would happen? He said, well, they would scar, and it might be because there were reports that Clark couldn't stand very long at any one time. That's all it said. Didn't tell us why. But here's Dalton with black feet. And I said, well, tell me why. And he said, listen, I told him that if this thing had happened during the Civil War, how would they have treated it? And the doctor said they would have used coal tar, black.
Hmm.
And I said, if they use coal tar, is it possible for that to stay in the foot for 60 years? He said, yes. So I don't know. I'm going to check that out even further. But someone might know. Some doctor, if you're listening, please tell me if is that possible. That if would they have used coal tar to heal a badly burned feet, and if so, would it have left the feet, the arch, black for 60 years?
Mm.
But anyway, let's continue. Dalton claimed to not only be Jesse James, but to be William Andrews Clark.
Yes.
And that's the connection that's really important, because William Andrews Clark was a major player in our past.
Well, let me ask you this, too, because we are coming up on another break here. Why did Dalton confess all this?
Dalton claimed that when he was a member of the Knights of the Golden Circle in the later years, all of the members that he knew at that time, or maybe the officers, or at least the people that he was friendly with, they all said that whoever gets to be 100 has got to tell the truth. Well, he was 100 in 1947. Mm-hmm. He showed up in 1948. That's the best reason, and apparently that's correct, because he was willing to answer questions and talk about it.
That's amazing.
But the tragic part is this, Frank. In 1948, there was no Ralph Epperson.
That's right.
Because if this man surfaced today, I would spend 24 hours a day with this man and get the story. But the people didn't understand. He was talking this language about the Knights of the Golden Circle. Who were they?
Mm.
William Andrews Clark. He didn't know anything about that. Civil War and all these stories. And they didn't understand conspiracy. Now, boy, I'll tell you, this man surfaced today, I would run there tomorrow morning on my knees if I had to, and just spend hours and hours and hours with him getting the story and writing, or probably tape recording it, and getting a record of it.
It is amazing, and you're absolutely right, because, you know, so often, there are so many conspiracies throughout history, and even today, when you look at things like September 11th and all the shenanigans, people say, why hasn't a whistleblower come forward? Well, obviously, we know even when they classify information, they keep it classified for, you know, I don't know, 40, 50 years, and then they declassify. And at that point, nobody seems to care anymore. And this guy's a perfect example of that.
Yep.
That here he surfaces, and he's got all this stuff, and they're like, whatever, man. You know, we don't care about you. You know, if you're Jesse James, so what? You're not important. When, in actuality, here's a guy, probably one of the most influential human beings in American history, as far as all the different things he perpetrated and was a part of, and he's talking about all this, the secret societies and everything, and nobody believes him. You're right on point. Hold on, folks. Back in three with more from our guest, Ralph Epperson.
Imagine a firefly, simple and innocent, the ability to light the night sky. The ozone layer, unseen by the naked eye, life-sustaining. Our ocean, primordial soup, breathes life. Bring the wonders of nature home.
Sole salt lamps, handcrafted from million-year-old crystal salt, will gently ionize and purify your indoor air, helping you breathe easier. Nourish your mind and body with soothing colors for deep relaxation, and neutralize EMF radiation, protecting your family's health.
Visit SOLAYWellness.com for powerful, simple, life-sustaining Sole Wellness products created from nature in harmony with nature.
Hi, I'm Isabella, founder of Sole Wellness. Visit us or call 866-497-0274, 866-497-0274.
Since 1988, Herbal Healer Academy has been the global supplier of the finest natural medicines. We specialize in keeping you alive and healthy. We provide outstanding products like ECX, colloidal silver, olive leaf extract, oregano oil, and hundreds of herbals, oils, books, and educational materials. We have homeopathic detox solutions for chemtrails, radiation, MSG, and aspartame poisoning. We also train naturopathic healers via correspondence education. Why wait any longer? Go ahead and do it today. Sign up on the web and receive our new 120-page catalog and a current Herbal Healer newsletter free. Simply log on to herbalhealer.com and check out the online member testimonials and our hundreds of exceptional products. That's herbalhealer.com, your website for safe, effective, natural alternatives and education. That's herbalhealer.com.
In the United States, it is now estimated that over 90% of family income is now being used to pay back consumer debt. Because of financial problems, mostly from credit card debt, approximately 1 in 4 families struggle to pay bills on even basic necessities such as mortgage, food, and utilities. And with millions of people desperately searching for a fresh start, North American Educational Services is here to help you regain your financial independence. We are very proud that the Debt Relief Educational Services Program has helped over 8,100 families nationwide since 1998, eliminating over $215 million of credit card debt, and still counting, and enabled clients to stop monthly payments immediately. The NAES program is unique, designed to help you, the consumer, not your creditors. To take back your financial freedom, call 1-888-245-7097. That's 1-888-245-7097. Or visit www.integritydebtoptions.com.
Thank you.
Welcome back. Tail end of hour number three, folks. Still got a full hour to go, and we've got verbal consent from our special guest this evening. He will stay on if you guys have calls. Our phone number, 800-313-9443. Toll-free worldwide, 1-800-313-9443. Ralph Epperson, welcome back, sir.
Thank you very much. I'm here. Okay, so, we're talking about Clark, I think.
Yes.
Let's put that story with Dalton together.
Yes.
Because this is where we really get into this story about Jesse James.
Mm-hmm.
Because we're going to discover that Clark, under that name, was a major player in our past. And I'll try to explain briefly as I can some of that past, because you're going to see that he was indeed, he helped shape the nation during the time from 1880, well, actually about 1900, all the way through about 1925 or 30. By the way, in 1925, well, let's do it this way. He lived under the alias of William Andrews Clark and became a multi-billionaire. He took the money from the Knights of the Golden Circle and used that money to build a railroad. That's his first example, build a railroad from Los Angeles to Salt Lake City. And he needed to build to get water for his steam engines around 1900. So he saw that Las Vegas was halfway between Los Angeles and Salt Lake City. Mm-hmm. So he needed to develop a water source. He bought a ranch with water rights in Las Vegas. At the time, according to the 1900 census, it was a town of like 30 people, I think, tent city, but he had water rights. So he built his railroad through and built a connection, a way to stop the steam engines to get water. So, but then, as a way to induce people to come and use his railroad, he decided to lay out the city of Las Vegas itself. And the downtown section, if you've ever been there, Las Vegas, is laid out in a square grid, you know, square blocks. And I know it's kind of long and narrow, but those were all laid out by Jesse James, William Andrews Clark, who owned that land. And he encouraged businesses to come so he could use the railroad. Now, that railroad, by the way, was the only one in the United States ever financed privately. He didn't borrow money. He didn't create a corporation. He didn't have partners. He didn't have stockholders. Why?
Wow.
And the explanation that Dalton gave is that he was afraid that people would start to dig into his past and find out he was really Jesse James.
Hmm.
So that's part of the reason why I believe that they were the same person, because that's very rare. Normally, these guys all raise money and borrow money and stockholders and bonds and everything else. Now, in recognition for what Clark did for Las Vegas, the state legislature took a long, narrow county called Lincoln County and chopped it in half, approximately, and put Las Vegas in the south end and named the county Clark County after William Andrews Clark. Now, I went to Las Vegas doing research for my book as I was writing before I wrote it, and I went to the Clark County Museum. Now, you walk in the door, and above the head, the doorway says Clark County Museum. So you think, boy, they're going to know all about Clark. So I walked in there, and the lady came out. It was just me and her. There was no one there besides the two of us, and later on, the manager.
Well, who goes to the museum in Vegas, Ralph? Just you.
That's right. You don't go to museums.
That's right. Let's go to Las Vegas and check out those happening museums.
That's what they need you to do, get showgirls to dance around.
There you go. I'd be there with you. Hold on, my friend. Quick break, folks. We're going to pause here for a brief station identification, but we're back in 90 seconds with more from our special guest this evening, Ralph Epperson. Check out the website, www.senatorjessejames.com.